Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another broadcast on Booker T. Washington Speaks. I am Haleem Mustafa, your co-host this evening, along with our host, Marshall Washington, the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, and author of a powerful historical book entitled Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. If you have not read it yet, I suggest you buy it online to read his firsthand accounts of growing up with his great-grandfather, Booker T. Washington. Last week's show was focused on our newly appointed Secretary of Education by President Trump. This week's discussion will be on the topic of education, but will focus on, do African Americans need an alternative K-12 educational system? Before we get started, I'd like to open in prayer as part of a tradition to thank Almighty God, our universal creator, for extending us life and the chance to improve our conditions as a collective group of African Americans. With the name of God, Allah, our universal, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to our Creator who made all life forms. You alone are master of Judgment Day, where all truths will be known, as well as the lies and deceits told and whispered by those who practice evil and racism to deceive the majority of men and women kind on earth, and do not take responsibility as caretakers of others less fortunate in order to preserve and sustain life on our wonderful planet Earth. Thee alone do we worship, Almighty God, and seek thy aid and guidance to the path of righteousness so we can remain humble and pious, as was all those righteous servants sent by you, Almighty Creator, to guide our hearts and minds to your mercy and grace. Show us a straight way, the way of those whose achievement, portions of success, is not evil, envious, or jealous of others. Amen. As we begin this show here, we actually have one of our speakers who's coming on shortly, Ms. Leslie Mahasan, Sister Leslie Mahasan, and she's going to certainly open up the discussions. I'm not sure if she's online at the moment here, but in any event, we'll kind of like continue on with some general discussions until she does get online here. And so it's going to be a lively discussion this evening. Last week was quite a lot of atoms were busted here as people were discussing the education of what is going to be some of the need to get charter schools established in certain communities of affluence. And it's time now for us as African Americans to decide what are we going to do with our children's future in education. Because we know without education there's no future, because we cannot do it without having knowledge about how to behave and act. But in any event, I have a co-host, Marshall Washington, here as well. So I don't know if you want to say anything to the group before we get started, sir. I'll continue. So in any event, The idea, do Black Americans need an alternative K-12 educational system? I think that's quite obvious that there has not been the best results from a lot of the white schools that are educating our black children. And in communities where we are a majority, we have teachers who are not themselves really concerned about giving a quality education. I've had conversations with parents of recent who tell me that they have young African American children who are genius in terms of their abilities, but in going to the public schools in the K-12 system, they're actually being ignored and they're not really producing or performing. So something definitely is not happening properly. If you don't have expectations for a child, they won't perform to the standard. So this is something that we as a people, as a group, are going to have to decide, because if we don't, certainly we'll end up back in a situation, and I regret to say this, in a state of almost being slaves again to other people's demands. Because education, when it's properly learned and implemented with the ideas of emancipation or economics or other topics and technology and other things of interest, you're able to make great achievements. And this has been proven by Dr. Booker T. Washington with the Tuskegee Institute, in which he founded and developed a great, great historical achievements. And this is evident today as we see that university still existing after 100-plus years. So I know that time is not up for us as people. We're just getting started. And it's our time to lead again our people to the promised land, if I can say that properly. So as Sister Mahasan, has she arrived online yet, sir?
No, she hasn't arrived yet. And so I really appreciate that introduction, and I'll let you know. I'll let everyone know when she does arrive. She's a very distinguished educator, so I'm certain that many of you are that are listening, and those who actually called in to participate in our forum. So I'm not going to give a long introduction to myself, a long speech about what I would like to have you talk about, which is the topic, should African Americans or do African Americans rather need an alternative educational system to further stimulate the motivation of our children and to push them further ahead in terms of academic achievement. I will say this about my own personal experience in K-12 education. I'm actually a product of an alternative educational system. I grew up in Tuskegee, Alabama. There was a public school system there, a very good public school system there. Most of the teachers that taught in the several public elementary schools and at the one high school that we had were graduates of the Tuskegee. So they were trained very well in the Booker T. Washington philosophy of education. But it just so happened through circumstances that I went to a private school, which was the Catholic school, the parochial school in Tuskegee. And I went there until I finished eighth grade, and then went to the public high school for 1 year, and then went to a private Catholic military school. So my experience is not as deep as some of yours in terms of teaching or being a student in the public system. And so because I do have somewhat of a biased opinion because of my experience, I'm going to withhold my comments until later. But I do see that we have quite a number of people that have come on. I don't see Sister Mrs. Leslie Muhammad's phone number on here. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and we'll ask you all to just chime in. And I see a familiar number from the 678 area code. The last two digits are 47. So I'd like to invite you to come on if you'd like and introduce yourself and comment. And then we have two or three other people that will follow right behind you. So our caller from the 678 area code, would you like to go ahead and make a comment to begin? Well, it's very possible that either the caller is away from the phone right now or is not ready to make a comment. Our next one that I'd like to invite
Hi,
to make a comment.
Excuse me. Yes, I'm here. How
okay,
are you?
Okay, great. Bye. Thank
evening.
You.
I want to say hello to the whole panel and to the commentators and listeners. My name's Judy Gresham, and I'm living here in Atlanta, but I'm also originally from Tuskegee.
Judy, that's fine. We talked earlier. We started looking forward to your comments. Would you like to make some introductory remarks based on what you heard so far about the topic?
No, I'm going to sit back and listen and take notes, and I will comment at a later time.
Well, let me say one thing before we go to the next person. Judy and I have a lot in common. We both grew up in Tuskegee, but more importantly than that, her father was my ninth grade civics teacher, and he was one of the most excellent teachers that I think ever existed on the face of this earth, and that's not hyperbole. I think anyone who studied under him would agree with me, and that was the only year that I did go to a public school in my K-12 experience, and because of him and several other of the teachers, I had a magnificent experience. So my hat's off to the Gresham family, and thank you, Judy, for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
All right. Now we're going to go on down the list. I have a caller from the 779 area code, last two numbers of the phone number, 23. Would you like to introduce yourself and make a few opening comments about what the topic is, about what you've heard?
Hi. Good evening. My name is Dr. Brandy Brown. I actually met you when you came to Rockford, and you spoke at the 100th anniversary of the Booker T. Washington Center here in Rockford. And Miss Baleen had just gave me the number to call and told me you was going to be speaking about education tonight, so that's why I called in.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being on the program, and my apologies for not having gotten back to you sooner, because we have a lot to talk about. I want you to take this back to all of the people that were so kind and generous to me during my visit there, that I certainly keep all of you in my prayers. That was a wonderful experience, and I will always treasure it, and hopefully I'll get back to Rockford before too long. And make whatever contribution I can to that community. I've adopted Rockford. I don't know if Mr. William Muhammad told you that, but I promised him that I was going to get a nice painting put over there in the Booker Center. I'm hoping to get an oil painting commission, a large painting put over there. So pass that on to him. So
yes, sir.
Would you like to make some introductory comments? You probably heard the topic addressed, but it is there a need for an alternative educational system to further enhance the motivation and the academic performance of African-American students? So if you'd like to address that topic or anything that you'd like to speak about for a minute or so, and then we'll go ahead and let the next caller talk, and then we'll all get back to each other. Okay, would you like to do that?
Yes. I definitely think that parents' choice towards alternative education is important, especially if the public education isn't working for that child, that they need to express that choice through an alternative school. And there are charter schools that are succeeding and making a difference. And really, in research, really since Brown versus Board of Education, public schools have been really trying to figure out how do we educate African American children. And where I live, a few charter schools, and some of their test scores are higher than the public schools. So to me, that demonstrates, you know, more of a reason why that choice to make an alternative decision for your child's life is important. And I do think charter schools should be supported, as well as the public education still needs to make continuous improvements through data to make a difference in the lives of our children.
Well, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate that, and we know we're going to hear more from you on this subject as we get further into the program. We'd like to bring on our caller from the 815 area code. This time, the last two numbers of the phone number are 25. Would you like to introduce yourself and make an opening comment?
Well, good evening, everybody. Christine Rashida Saleem from Rockford, and basically, I'm going to listen. And if I need to make a comment, I will. And I'm happy, really, to be on the show to share with everyone and listen to everyone, because it's really a nationwide concern. You know, we all have the same concerns, you know, and it's going to be nice listening to everybody from different parts of the country. So that's about all I need to say.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate everything you've done for us, going almost a year back into the past when I was first indirectly introduced to you by our brother Salim, Abdul Salim Mateen in Washington, when he asked me to sign a book that he purchased that he wanted to send to you, one of the copies of my book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And of course, out of that proceeded the invitation to come to Rockford to participate in the 100th anniversary celebration of the Booker Center, which was a wonderful experience for myself and my wife. And of course, you've been very supportive of me since that time and even before we met in person. So thank you again for being on our show tonight. Well, I'm not going to make a speech. I'll just give you all a chance to think about a couple of things. And that's the fact that I have been traveling around for quite a number of years, for about 40 years actually, and visiting schools and speaking at schools, primarily because during Black History Month, or now we call it African American History Month, the school administrations welcome someone with a name that refers back to someone in Black history, and I just happen to carry the Washington name, and so I've received quite a number of invitations throughout the years to speak. But one of the things that's happened to me recently, and some of you who are teachers may be familiar with the issue that I'm going to address very, very briefly, I have been invited to speak at a middle school on next Friday. And I received an email from the host teacher that is actually organizing this Black History Month program. And she told me that she wanted me to address Booker T. Washington, but she told me that she wanted me to address the question, who was Booker T. Washington? And that sort of set me back a little bit. It kind of stunned me because, you know, this is middle school, and you know, we're talking about students that are getting ready to begin the critically important high school years. You know, we're talking about 13-year-old students, some 12-year-old students, and so forth. And they've lived on this earth as African-American children, because this is almost 100% African-American school. And they've lived on this earth 12 or 13 years, and already they don't know who Booker T. Washington was. They have to be told that by Booker T. Washington's relative. And they have to be told this during 1 month out of the year, Black History Month. And I'm saying to myself, why haven't they learned already who Booker T. Washington was? They've learned probably who George Washington was. But why did the curriculum leave out Booker T. Washington? There's a reason for that. And it's the same reason for something else that happened to me during Black History Month last year. I went to a high school. Now, these students are older. We're talking about 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, some 19-year-olds, and maybe 13-year-olds, too. I started high school when I was 13, but they call that ninth grade middle school now. But the fact is that I spoke to the seniors, and after the talk, when the seniors had gone back to class, the teacher, and I started to say professor because she has a doctorate in education, but she brought a large 1,000-page volume of Black literature, what we call Black literature, African-American literature, to me, and she says, I saved this to give to you as a gift. And I said to myself, why did she have to save it? I mean, there was an issue, and she explained it. She had been ordered, or the school had been ordered, to collect all of those books and get them out of the schools. Because she said the Board of Education felt that the students didn't need to learn about the literature of great famous black people. And I mean, when you look at that pantheon of names going back to people like Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington, of course, and W.E.B. Du Bois and James Weldon Johnson, James Baldwin, and Sojourner Truth, Phyllis Wheatley, coming all the way up to the modern times, people like Martin Luther King and Langston Hughes, and just so many greats. And they don't want the black students to know about these people and what they wrote. And it's the same attitude, I think, that caused the students at this school that I'll be speaking at next week not to know anything by the time they're 12 and 13 years old about another person that they should know about. Because knowing about these people stimulates within them the desire to achieve what they achieve. And then the other part of the conversation, which the lady sent me an email, and she said, now, be careful. She didn't use these exact words, but she said, be careful that you don't say anything about God. But she didn't put it like that. She said, don't talk about religion. Well, the essence of religion is worshiping God, I believe. And she said, don't say anything about God. But Booker T. Washington, when he founded Tuskegee, it was all about God, because the reason why black people wanted to get educated back in the days after slavery was so they could read the Bible. That was the main reason why they wanted to go to school. But now they don't want people to be taught that there is a Bible in the school. So we're living in a dangerous time, and I just wanted to say that. And I'm not complaining, because I work within their framework, but the fact is that we need to have an alternative. So a lot of people are setting up weekend schools so they can teach the children the things that they should be taught in the public schools. So that's what I have. So we're going to go back to our co-host right now. And I still don't see Mrs. Mahasin come up yet, but she did promise me earlier that she would be on. So I'd like for you to go ahead, and if you want to make some comments, we'll just go back down the list that we have in front of us.
Yes, Haleem Mustafa here in Dallas, Texas now. I'm from California. And I was making note here as to the parent choice for alternative schools that the sister Judy, I believe, was commenting on. And the idea of test scores higher at the charter schools, I had some experience that some of those test scores are memory-based and not necessarily proving the fact that they really are smarter, improved children. So I just want to make that point to note that the memory-based tests do not actually make the intelligence of a child that evident, even though, they might compare it off a lot of things. I think the real point comes when there's a challenge with critical thinking in matters of daily life, et cetera, et cetera. I certainly agree that the public schools need improvement, and I'm a product of public school myself, and I was certainly not an A student, but I was a functional student. And a lot of my A student classmates, a lot of them ended up in my circumstance, community I raised up in, on drugs and selling drugs like Superfly and all these other things that took them off track, and they were never made any contributions to the community where I'm from, East Palo Alto, which was known as Little Nairobi, which had taken on that name of Nairobi, Africa, the sister city. So it's a really delicate situation we're dealing with. And I certainly know that there needs to be a new identity of our young people as they perceive themselves to not be inferior or what is stereotypical of black people being, drug sellers and alcoholics and all the negative things that this society actually uses in their media marketing, in their TV commercials, in their shows that they always, you watch Law and Order and these shows. They're reflecting black people in a very dark light, and I don't see it being an equal parity with white people or other groups being shown in that same way. That's just a few comments for now, but I think that we're on something that has to be discussed, and we have to make moves. We can't sit still and not do nothing, because that's going to certainly show that we're not thinking people. And the comment I say is that the people who don't know their past or don't remember their past are doomed to repeat the mistakes. And I don't want to be a part of that group of people. So I'm going to make effort all I can to contribute to help our young people understand who they are as a cultural group, ACE specifically.
Well, thank you. At this time, I want to ask our friend, Mrs. Christina Rashida Salim, if you could introduce our distinguished educator from Rockford. We spoke, and of course, you know, I thanked her for her kindness when I was there, but could you, based on your knowledge of her, give us a little bit of her background from what you know of her? And of course, she can elaborate on it when she speaks, but we certainly would like to hear more from her. Could you go ahead and give us a little brief introduction to her?
Well, I'll let her, I'll let her share that, you know, if you don't mind.
No, that's
we've
fine.
We've worked together. Yeah, we've worked together a lot, but I would rather let her, you know.
Well, that's fine.
Share.
Are you,
share.
Okay, doctor, are you ready to come back? We'd like to hear some more from you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, even right now with even the No Child Left Behind Act 2001, when that took place, that was supposed to, that's where the education gap between black and white students really began to stand out. And that's where Bush decided, okay, we're going to put certified teachers in the classroom. But, you know, as of today, you know, certified teachers are having a difficult time closing this gap, as well as really developing the teacher-student relationship with students that, you know, they really need to have. And I think the brother had mentioned that, somebody had mentioned expectations. And expectations are key. High expectations is key to the student's success. If that student know that teacher cares about how their work is turned in, if the first and last name is written on there, the handwriting is neat, then that student, I believe that student will meet that expectation. However, if there's a teacher that don't have expectations for handwriting neat, the student isn't going to do that. And I also work in our school district as a substitute teacher, and I've been a substitute teacher for 4 years now. And I've observed that happening where when I go into a classroom, I set the atmosphere. I set the environment to let the kids know I'm here to help you. And many times I don't have issues with that child that they wrote a whole long note about this child's disrupted, this child has issues. And when that teacher finds out that child wasn't kicked out and they had me, then, you know, instead of coming to me like, how did you work with that person, that teacher ends up usually having an attitude with me or something. But children know who likes them and not. And I think, too, and this goes back to the alternative, where, you know, you don't have those rules where you got to sit down all day. And, like, for our boys, they're more kinesthetic learners, meaning that they like to move around a lot. They like to get up and, or you know, be more, have more autonomy in what they want to work on at that moment. In many alternative school settings, you have those options to, those students have options to get up, move around, work on an assignment they want to work on, because it's more student-centered classrooms. And many times in the public schools, boys are required to sit for long periods of time. Kawase Jigufu wrote a whole book about, you know, how that's going to keep that child in trouble, or the teacher going to say they need medication. And so, you know, I believe in choice. And as a parent of three children, especially I have a son, you know, I just really believe that unless that parent's going to really be involved through public school, making sure that their child don't get a fine label, And as a mom, I had to block those type of labels they try to put on my son. So, you know, and not every parent has that courage to do that. And the education in itself needs to also be a village project. And I think the people of the community, you know, needs to come into schools too, to mentor, to, and I'm not just talking about our school district, I'm talking about nationally. People need to come in, like how you, Mr. Abue, you're going into the schools and speaking in the assemblies. And, you know, I do believe our children, our black children, are disconnected from the rich heritage of our ancestors. Even the, you know, dear ancestor of Booker T. Washington, you know, our children don't know. And sadly, today, teachers don't know. And white teachers need black history the most because they are the ones in the positions of teaching our children. And so that's my view of just what I encounter being a substitute teacher, as well as being the mother of three children, a boy and two girls, that are in public school system. And what I was going to say is, too, you know, a lot of parents depend on their teachers to teach them, but sadly, many teachers are not teaching the children because they're coming up with all type of excuses, like it's the home, it's the parents. Is everything else but the way they teach.
Excuse me. Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Doctor. That actually leads into something I wanted to share, the connection with what you just said. I had the opportunity about a little less than a year ago through our friend, Sister Christina Rashida Salim, to acquire a very, very thought-provoking and enlightening book by a master teacher by the name of Nura Amatullah Muhammad. And I was hoping that I could contact her to come on the program tonight, but this book that she wrote is in my hand at this time. It's called Education in Creation, The Tree of Knowledge. And one reason why that title actually resonated with me before I even opened the book is because it actually made me reflect on Booker T. Washington and his style of teaching. And just briefly, I'll tell you about an incident or an event that happened at Tuskegee early in the history of Tuskegee, the school. He would make it a practice to pass, especially, you know, in the warm weather, springtime weather, on the outsides of the buildings. They did not have air conditioning back in those days, obviously. And so the teachers would raise the windows to get ventilation. And he would walk, you know, subtly past the classrooms and look to see what the teachers were doing, how they were doing it. And he noticed this one teacher was teaching a botany class, teaching about some particular type of flower, which is called the goldenrod. And it's a wild flower, but it's very prevalent in Alabama around Tuskegee. At least it was in my youth. And she had some colored chalk, and she drew a picture of this, and she was explaining the different parts, you know, the different botanical parts of the plant. And Booker T. Washington looked down near his feet, there was area that was filled with these plants, real plants. And so he pulled up one or two, and he didn't usually like to disturb the teaching process, but he went to the door, knocked on the door to announce that he was wanting to come in and say something. And so he corrected the teacher, but really his lesson was very important. He said, "Why are you drawing pictures of this goldenrod plant when right outside your window there are hundreds of them? Why didn't you just bring the real plant in here and and show the students, because they see these all over the place, and they could connect better if they saw the real plant than a picture of the plant. And so here was the basis of his educational philosophy, which was practicality. You know, let's put the students in an environment where they can touch and feel and experience things that you want them to learn about, so that it will stick with them. So when they get away from the classroom, these things will still have meaning. So I just want to share just a paragraph from the book Education and Creation, The Tree of Knowledge by Mrs. Nura Amatullah Muhammad. And she says in her book, it is so important in the early grades for teachers to observe carefully the growth and development of the student, so that whenever problems begin to arise, they can be remediated immediately. Many teachers complain that they have too many children, but I find it possible to help them, because the teacher does not study each child every day, but notes the differences that occur from time to time. I normally had 35 to 40 children at the time I was teaching in public schools. Now the teachers complain if they have 20 children. It takes a special effort to apply all of one's professional skills to the learning experience in order that the children get the very best education possible. Even in contemporary society, if teachers are well trained in classroom management, ability grouping, effective planning, and other necessary skills for managing the education of larger groups, I believe that they could handle more children effectively and efficiently. Well, I agree with her, but you know, having taught young children in fourth and fifth grade, but not in a public school, in a private parochial school, I personally prefer smaller groups where I can actually interact on a consistent basis with the children and get to know them. But that's another problem with the public school system. As many of you who are professional teachers know, in a lot of the urban areas, they're closing down the small neighborhood schools where the teachers do have more of an opportunity to get to know the children and their families, and they're combining these schools into these larger schools. And in some cases, these larger schools, in my opinion, because I visit a lot of them, and I would not want to make it sound like that I am not grateful for the opportunity to visit to them, but a lot of the schools are almost like prisons. I mean, sure, they're nice, they have pretty pictures on the wall, they're clean, you know, but you get a feeling that the students are not being encouraged to be creative and to be expressive. And because the whole point is to keep them in order, because the teachers, for whatever reason, in some cases, not all, don't know how to actually manage them so that they can, at the same time of being in order, can be expressive. And that's the problem. So I've said enough on that. I'd like to go back to our caller who demurred a few minutes ago from the 678 area code. Judy, would you like to say something at this point? You've raised a daughter in the school system. What's your reaction? Or not just a daughter, I think a son and a daughter, if I'm not mistaken. Would you like to express something on that? She may have gone away from the mic.
Are you able to hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had my mute button on. Yes, I'm just happy to be here and a part of the discussion. And I was listening. Several points have been made. And one of the things I just wanted to follow up on the sister's comments that just finished speaking, that's the teacher. I think it's really important for I was agreeing with the point she made, and I also think it's important that the teachers are relating to the culture. They're sensitive to the culture of the students that they're teaching. So that's one of the important reasons why having the local community schools and having teachers who can relate to the students, I think students are able to learn better in that environment. And as well, I think it's important that students are able to, when they're reading and studying history books, you know, when you're reading about all the white emperors and the Greeks and the Romans, and you're not seeing any of these this greatness in your own color and shade in your people, you really don't relate to the information. It's not empowering. So I think it's important. That's one of the values of studying our own history and having books that talk about some of the greatness that's within the community of students, their own lineage of ancestors and people. It's very important. That Black History Month, although it be just a short 30 days, or this African American History, as you say, they've changed the name. Even as short as it is, it's an opportunity for students to have a chance to learn more about their culture and their heritage, and I think this is very important. And one of the things I had shared with you earlier, Marshall, in another previous discussion, here in Atlanta, I'm part of a study circle where we are studying and analyzing and really breaking down a book called The Destruction of Black Civilization by Chancellor Williams. And that's one of the really part of the main emphasis of the book, is he's trying to uncover all of the different factors and things that have happened to us as a people from 4500 BC all the way to 2000. And one of the main things that we keep coming back to is the education, you know, of our people. It's been always a systematic plan to keep us from knowing who we are and to, you know, to keep all of our history covered up in every aspect and on every level. So that's just one of the comments I'd like to contribute tonight.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Judy. That gives me the opportunity to ask our caller from the 404 area code, last two numbers are 27. And Brother Halim, I believe that our dear sister Mahasin has come on, and we're going to ask her to just hold on for just a second. I know she has a lot to tell us, but we'd like for our caller from the 404 area code, last two numbers of the phone number 27. Good evening. How are you tonight? And thank you for coming on. I was glad you got my message. And we're just talking about the topic: do African Americans need to have an alternative educational system to better motivate our young people and to give them a better chance of achieving academic excellence? Would you like to, as a teacher, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, I think the previous caller hit it on the head. Just no matter what, historical legacy is important for any people. Showing people where they've been also gives them the idea of what they can be. So that's why they do the July 4th and then, you know, and all the other things of Americana for white children. They get a better understanding of possibilities, and also you take away the idea of limitations. So when you give Black children this rich history that we actually have, then you're starting about, you're talking about a whole different mind state. You don't have children kind of zoning out because they get this opportunity to really understand who they are, what they are. And when you look at what happens as far as, you know, this raggedy school system here, typically middle school is when we start to see the gains being lost for children, or we start to see them not becoming as, you know, interested in certain schools. And I think that plays a huge part of it, the idea of being a part of somebody else's thing instead of having our own thing. And, yeah, history is always most important. That book she recommended is great. I would also recommend, since we, you know, have the technology now, you know, the great Black historians who are out there. Dr. Clark's lectures are available for, you know, kids to pick up early. And if kids are starting off where we started off in freshman year in college, who knows where they might go as far as thinking. So, you know, way too many resources out here for us to be stagnant on this.
Absolutely. And, Doctor, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And would you just give the audience, we've got a number of callers that have called in to be able to speak, but we probably have maybe 10 times as many that are on the Internet that I can't see at my studio on my technology. But could you give us a little brief introduction to yourself and let us know a little bit about your background?
Is that for
okay.
me or another caller?
No, that's for you. That's for you.
Oh, no. I'm not the guy you sent the invite to. I was just the guy who called in tonight. So
okay,
I saw the topic and just called.
Invited. But still, if you'd like to give us a little introduction to yourself, we'd like to. We're kind of like having what we call a family room chat. If you've seen us on the internet, we have a picture of a family room with nice, comfortable furniture. And the idea is we're just having a talk, a family talk about a problem that we all need to get together and try to solve. So that's why I don't, you know, say if you don't want to do it, to do it. But if you'd like to introduce yourself and give us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, no problem. My name is Naj. I've done, you know, student tutoring. I've done TA as far as teacher's assistant. I am not a high-level graduate. I am a fan of history, meaning I studied many different eras, mostly African and African-American history. And, you know, I feel like no matter what, getting this information out is more important than being forced into somebody else's dynamic. And, you know, I just take great pride in making sure that more people know things that I didn't know at the age that they're getting it. Cause I think that's the biggest obstacle we got going, the not knowing.
Well, we appreciate that. We want to go ahead and turn over to our co-host, Mr. Hani Mustafa, and Sister Leslie Mahasan has come on. So would you give us an introduction to her? You know her from many years back, and we'd like for you to just tell us a little bit about her. And she can go ahead and add to that and tell us about herself. But we're certainly looking forward to seeing you, Ms. Mahasan. So, Brother Halim Mustafa, would you like to introduce her?
Most certainly. I would say that I've known for many years when I was a police officer in East Palo Alto. That's when we first became friends and associates working in the ideas of developing programs for young people. And we established an Unhooked Generation effort to stop drugs and alcohol in the mindsets of young people. And I've known Sister Mahasan engaging in conversations regarding how to beautify the communities, how to unite the elders and make them feel a part of something that's futuristic. She certainly, you know, it's more than that I can say regarding her and her current efforts, which I find extraordinary, how she's evolved to a point where now she's sounds like she should be the Secretary of Education for Mr. Trump. So I would like to just say let her work speak for itself. And so Sister Mahasan, welcome to Brooksy Washington Speaks, and let us have a piece of that heaven that you got in your heart.
Alhamdulillah. Okay, thank you. I had it on mute for a while. But with the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, with the name, his name, and with his mercy and his blessings, we all do exist, and inshallah, we all strive. My name is Mahasan Abdul Salam, and thank you so much for your gracious words about you, Brother Marshall Abui. I'm in awe and honored to spend time on Booker T. Washington Speaks with you. Want to share a bit of what might be helpful in progressing us, moving us along as a people, looking into what has been the throes of our success thus far, as you recited the words to our most beautiful national anthem. It really tells the truth about the challenge and the struggles that we have faced and what we can look forward to excuse me, in moving toward our future. And that is of most, the greatest impact is what we can give to those who will carry the future forward. And we're speaking specifically of our youth, because the ball is indeed in their court. We have been prepared as the African American national anthem states so poetically. We have been prepared for the struggles that we have endured The sister went back to 4500 BC. Yes, I agree with her that it started way back then, if not further. And we have progressed forward, as we say, on this stony road, stony the road we've trod, been chastened by some of the bitterness we've encountered as a people, but we've also been remade as a people. And so there are just two or three ideas or concepts that I think it's important for us to embrace at this time. So again, thank you for inviting me in. I will share some of what is the concerns collectively as a group of educators and knowledgeable African Americans. We've always been given the wherewithal, that's a phrase that our ancestors used to use, forefathers. When they came here, they captured a language and a way of expressing themselves that included tremendous mother wit and common sense. And we want to preserve that to this day because it created success for them, and it will continue to create success for us if we pay attention to it. So I have, again, as I mentioned last week, two very dynamic educators who will be coming forward in the next few weeks, one due to illness and the other due to a change of plans, could not be with us tonight. Dr. Noura Amatala Muhammad, who is an educator par excellence. She's 86 years old. She has been gifted with the development of a complete curriculum from K to 12 that speaks to the nature of the intellect of the human mind, and specializing in the category of mathematics and science. And she's written a book, Quranic-Based Education, that can be acquired on Amazon. And we'll mention that again before this show is over. And another educator par excellence here who wants to talk to us, as I say, possibly next week, about homeschooling and licensed in-home daycare, how we, and she has institutionalized it for the last 25 years. I have worked with her for about 15 years, and she has college graduates, professionals who started as preschoolers, but she has proven that African-American-based education works. And so the simple answer to our concern and question tonight, Inamaboy, is not what do we have in store for the African-American in terms of K through 12 education. We can take the question out of it and resort to the commitment that we must produce as our forefathers did. We must meet our own needs educationally. We can do this. Your great-grandfather was an example of this. All of those who struggle and strove to advance themselves and their intellect and their quality of life did so by pushing forward through the avenue of knowledge and gifts, their nature, their God-given intellect to achieve. And so we are not at a loss in terms of the how to or the when. The when is now. As soon as your consciousness opens itself up to the need for us to do self-education, to take the capacities that we have so uniquely been given. We are a people who were brought here, broken down and rebuilt, and then who helped build, in fact, this country. The greatness of America is due in huge part to our contribution. Imam Muhammad had said at one time, he said, the African American is the most inventive creature. Then he added on to that, paused and said, for everybody else but himself. So that just means there's a wealth and a weighty contribution that we have made to this entire society. We had an urgent effort or desire to make life livable for ourselves, make it easier, remove some of the oppression, etc. But it ended up making life better for everyone. Is that noise? I'm hearing some background noise. And so I do appreciate the comments that have been made by the other speakers. The other listeners who have come on the line. Certainly this is a challenging time for us because it seems as though there is some backward turning, sort of erasing of history. I call it disacknowledgement of the value that has been so much part of our contribution to America. We really took it to heart, the constitutional commitment, the Emancipation Proclamation, and we focused on realizing, making real the life that was promised, this promised destiny. And so here we are in a situation where the circumstances very much so seeing that they're going to require us to go through another building stage. Now, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit excited about that. We've historically been a people, others have said, who can make something out of nothing. Or at least we can take a bad situation and make it better. This is a gift. This is an intuitive talent that God has given us, I fully believe. And our challenge will be to use it. So we should not be surprised if circumstances arise that require us to seemingly start from scratch, reinvent ourselves, reinvent the institutions that we need in our society and that our lives are built upon to perfect them. We say, the Muslims have a saying that when we seek to do a thing, we seek to do it with excellence. So we don't rely in the just good enough arena and category. We seek perfection in what we do. And we can do this. not only for ourselves, but for others of like mind. And so, Professor Abuli, if there are any questions that you feel are strategic at this point around the question of African American education and educators, please feel free to post them.
Are there any questions?
Halim Mustafa, I have a comment, sir, if I would. I know we're
talking. She has the floor, so ask her if she's ready to accept a comment.
Sister Hassan, I have a comment, if I could.
By all means.
Okay, thank you. The idea of K-12 education, certainly, but I find at the college level a dysfunction of immaturity of these college students who are supposed to be the new leadership developed. So is that a fault of the K-12 system, letting immature students grow up and become so active in these fraternities and sororities that they become immature in their behavior?
Well, I'm looking at it in this framework, and thank you for your question. It is a concern, and the term we use mostly when we feel our students are not growing to their potential or getting off the track is the tremendous distractions that exist for them now. And more than ever, I think you can agree, in contrast to the times of our educational experience in history, the environment, educational environment, is fraught with distractions for our children and for our secondary and college level students. But this is where the challenge for us really exists, because if we remember the history of post-Reconstruction, right after emancipation, we had to figure out what things were important to us in terms of advancing our life. We had to discern what was important to advance our knowledge, our humanity, and our excelling in this life. The good enough syndrome, just quote-unquote adequate education, was not good enough. We had hurdles to overcome to advance ourselves and improve our lives. This was a big challenge, and at that time the attitudes were such, especially post-slavery, that if we don't do this, no one will. We have to do this ourselves. And so that was a level of reality, and you could call it maturity, that rests within us when we looked at what our reality really was and called upon our inner capacity and inner ability to meet that challenge. It was sobering for us. In contrast, today, from the time that children are born and become aware, they are confronted and bombarded with a tremendous amount of make-believe in the world. They are preoccupied in their early childhood education, the most formative period of learning in the human mind, where up until about age 6 or 7, 90% of the knowledge they will need or utilize for life is acquired if it is approached correctly. Maria Montessori wrote a book called The Absorbent Mind, and she was detailing how the human intellect works from an early age, the structure of that. And we were empowered coming and facing that great challenge of re-educating ourselves, restructuring our lives, fighting stereotypes, rising above the low ceiling of capacity that was structured for us, low expectations, etc. And we had the wisdom also and the concern of those who had gone through the hardships of being enslaved to urge us on, to urge us to be serious. And so today we have a very different landscape, educational landscape. And in and of itself, this is a big challenge for us in terms of how we show up. We can commend a large population of students for taking their lives seriously, being nurtured by their teachers, their educators, et cetera, and making progress, unheard of progress, intellectually in some cases. But we have a large population also, in contrast to that, whose have been sufficiently distracted and quote-unquote what we can call miss the educational boat, especially in early childhood, for getting a solid foundation established from which to propel forward and take the community, advance the educational capacity of the community in which they live. So this is a challenge for us, as you're speaking about your concern for the distractions, the seeming immaturity, the challenge of brain power and how to utilize the intellect, the human brain, for advancement, the distractions that exist today in society really work very much against that. But this is where the demand for us as assessing what our needs are educationally, as a group, as a society, as a group of people who want to move forward collectively. We have what it takes to perceive what the needs are and to set a plan and a strategy that will work for us. We need these think tank situations established in our communities, in our schools, in our churches. So strategic planning is a constant occupation for us. Laying that blueprint, reworking that blueprint that you're talking about, this needs to be our constant preoccupation. If we're not working and working and striving to solve these problems, critical thinking applied to reach our goals, set goals and reach those goals, we are past the point where we can depend on someone else whose interests may not be in line with ours to do that for us. We have got to resort to our own effort, making our way, utilizing and acquiring the resources and tools that would allow us to do that. Much like the programs that you are establishing yourself.
I'm listening. I understand. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yes.
I'd like just to interject something. Sister Mahasan just mentioned the what we called the Black National Anthem, but I prefer to use the word African American. That hasn't become popular as far as the name of this song is concerned. But I want to share, since you made reference to the song, I'm not going to sing it, but I'm just going to share the lyrics because we do have an audience that is connected to us via the internet. And even though I don't see them, they don't appear as you all are appearing on my studio dashboard. I see all of your phone numbers. Their names aren't attached, but I'm getting to get to know whose name goes with what phone number. But the people that go up on the internet, which could be in the hundreds, I don't know who they are. But I do want, since it was referenced, the song was referenced, I do want to give the lyrics. And this way, those people that have not really become familiar with the lyrics, we hear the song on many occasions, but I'd like to share the lyrics so we can ponder over them on our own time, obviously. But this was written by James Weldon Johnson, and the title is Lift Every Voice and Sing. And it proceeds, lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died. Yet with a steady beat, have not our weary feet come to the place for which our fathers sighed. We have come over a way that with tears has been watered. We have come treading our path through the blood of the slaughtered. Out from the gloomy past, till now we stand at last, where the white gleam of our bright star is cast. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us thus far on the way, thou who has by thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path we pray, lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we met thee, lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world, we forget thee. Shadowed beneath thy hand, may we forever stand true to our God, true to our native land. This is so that those that heard the reference that you made to the hymn, as we call it, the Black National Anthem, or the Black People's Hymn, that they will actually know the meaning of what you were referring to, the deep meaning of these powerful, potent, and expressive words of our past, present, and our future by James Weldon Johnson. We're in the second half of our program time, but I don't know if we'll go the whole 2 hours tonight. I know some of you may be tired from a long day, and so we won't go any further than I feel comfortable. I see that we have lost another caller, and the hour is late, but I do want to end by giving the callers that are still on the line the opportunity to make some final comments. I think we will probably close before the 2 hours have elapsed. And that'll be fine, because just like any other living room conversation, when the people get ready to move on to other activities for the evening, then you will turn the music down to another pitch and things will begin to eventually go into another domain. So what we're going to do, we're going to ask if our caller, Judy, would you like to say something as we get ready to close?
Yes, I would like to make a comment. I was taking some notes, and it's been very, very interesting conversation and interesting input from everyone. I had made some notes here, and what I had really said here was, and what I really believe is that we are an oppressed people living in a white supremacist system. And the public school system is very much a part of this white supremacist system. So it's time for our children to have an empowering education. Our children need to discover their genius. They need to discover their greatness. And one of the keys to their being empowered, more empowered, and is to seek an alternative education, a more superior education, educational curriculum, and this is what's needed, as far as I'm concerned, for them to achieve and succeed and to step into their greatness. And so I also wanted to say that we need to take control of our children's mind by taking back the reins and control of the type of education that we would like to see our children receive. Our children need a liberating education in order to liberate their minds. And when I reflect on Booker T. Washington, for example, and my parents were both educators, my mother a first grade teacher, my father, you mentioned, a high school teacher, secondary, and I've been a pre-K early childhood teacher, and we just love education. And back in the day, education was the key, and I think that's one of the differences now with segregation. When we were in the period of segregation, and even, you know, prior to segregation, just from slavery, our people knew that education was the key. So they taught children with the idea that we're trying to empower you to succeed, and you, and we know that the survival, all it was, you know, related to survival. So that's one of the things that's missing now. A lot of the, with all due respect, a lot of the young teachers we have today, they're products of this same miseducation that Carter G. Woodson talks about. So they're not able to teach at times, you know, give them the type of education that will be an empowering education. So the last thing I wanted to say, I attended a couple of years ago in Atlanta, and they stopped this back, I guess, in the 2000s. They used to hold a really large conference, and the theme of it was the infusion of African-American content into the curriculum. And it was just an awesome conference with all kinds of speakers, like Dr. Kanjufu, The Destruction of Black Boys, Dr. Molefi Asante was there, and they had all different speakers. It happened for a couple of different years, and it was all kind of curriculums, workshops for charter schools and for homeschooling. That's what we've got to return to. So I agree and do believe that we need to look at alternative methods for educating our children, Saturday schools, and we really need to get serious about getting it done. That's my comment.
Well, thanks, Judy. It certainly is appreciated, I'm sure, by everyone in our family room tonight.
Yes.
So we're going to go ahead and begin to wrap up now. Our caller from the 815 area code, last number is 25. I don't know if you had wanted to add anything as we get ready to do our wrap-up, but would you like to please go ahead and take the floor for whatever amount of time you would like?
Well, I just wanted to share that I did talk with Amatula, Sister Amatula, and she said that she was into something else, and that's why she couldn't make it on here. But she said that if she had known, she would have been here sooner. And I've enjoyed all the comments. You know, this is kind of a time for me when I'm, like, going downhill after getting up so early. But I've really enjoyed the comments from everybody.
Well, thank you so much. And I think we're all about ready for moving into another part of the evening, so we're not going to actually pursue much more. I just wanted to give everyone a chance to make closing comments. So we've heard from Sister Mahasin. We'll give you a chance to make a closing comment. But we certainly thank everyone for being with us tonight. I just want to announce, because this will be posted on my Facebook page and probably shared with other people's Facebook pages or on other people's Facebook pages. So I'm going to announce that next week we're going to talk about, should African American colleges, the HBCUs, seek to establish their own accrediting association and get it approved by the Department of Education, because of the fact that many of our HBCUs are on the borderline in terms of meeting the fiscal stability requirements to be accredited by the six major regional accrediting associations. But as long as the Department of Education recognizes a new HBCU-focused accrediting body, then the students will still be able to get federal financial aid to attend. And this might be the solution for many of our schools that don't seem to be able to have large enough revenues coming in or large enough endowments to be able to meet the increasingly stringent financial or fiscal stability requirements of the Big Six, as they're called. So we're going to talk about that next week. I'm going to hopefully get one or two college administrators that work with SACS, maybe even a college president or two, and see what they have to say. But we still would like for everyone that has an interest in the future of our HBCUs, and I'm sure that's all of us, to come on again and express your concerns and your opinions. But I just want to announce in advance the planned topic for next week. But we want to save our HBCUs, but it looks like something drastic is going to have to be done in terms of a accreditation system to keep the federal money coming to our students. Having said that, I will just go the last person besides my co-host, Sister Mahasin. Would you like to make a final comment before we close out?
I'm just appreciating the comments of Sister Julian, really being specific and to a point with us and her concept. I totally embrace them, and I want to encourage us, especially mothers and teachers in our community, female teachers. This is one of the most, it's an intense well of information that is available to us, hands-on impact and approach with our children and our youth. And when we go back and study the original educational spirit that captured those who were great achievers in our African American history, like Septima Clark, Ida B. Wells, Mary Church Terrell, and others, very well known educators who fought to really take hold of education as a tool for liberation. And I think if we talk about that and pull out some of those tasks and approaches that they certainly left with us as a legacy, that we'll find the answer and a progressive answer to our needs in establishing independent education for ourselves and advancement. So I look forward to next week. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. And we just want to close out. You are finished, Sister Mahasin. I don't want to break in on you.
No, I'm finished. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay, quite welcome. Okay, Judy, did you want to make any final comment? I'm going to turn it over in just a second to my co-host to actually do the final goodbye or wrap up. I want to read something from Booker T. Washington real quick before he does that. But Judy, did you want to say anything before we wrap up?
No, everything. I've made all of my comments. I really enjoyed the show and just look forward to next week.
Okay, wonderful. We certainly look forward to you being with us next week. I just want to share something really briefly. This is actually a quotation from a book which was a doctoral dissertation written back in the 70s by Dr. William Delaney, a African-American educational historian. The name of his dissertation, which was published, self-published in a book titled Learn by Doing, A Projected Educational Philosophy in the Thought of Booker T. Washington. And it's not very long. I'm just going to read this part, which is rather brief. But Dr. Delaney says about Booker T. Washington that he was a blend of down-to-earth realism, scientific knowledge, and industry. He knew that the application of the techniques of science to transform agriculture would eventually lead the Negro, he used the old term we used to use, Negro, to the good life. The shrewd realism of Booker T. Washington led him to recognize that there was need for intellectual or cultural education along with practical experience in journalism and public affairs. With Washington, it was always teamwork with him as a leader, and he said it was teamwork that built Tuskegee. A tireless worker himself, he imposed heavy burdens on others. The principal, meaning Booker T. Washington, constantly tried to give his staff the consciousness, as one of them put it in conversation, that no matter how humble the work might be, he felt that he was helping to run the institution. So everybody had a part and everybody was made to feel important. Booker T. Washington believed that an individual had education if he really learned to do one thing well, and that objective was within the power of everyone who will to achieve it. He believed that by working on the solid basis, which he advocated, and taking charge of the whole life of the student, it would be possible to bring in a youth from tropical Africa, which he did have students from colonies in Africa, or from a deep south plantation, and send him on to Yale or Harvard. So we have a lot to work towards. The vision goes way, way back, but we just need to continue to implement the vision of Booker T. Washington and many of the other great leaders among our people. So with that said, it's time, I suppose, for us to wrap it up for tonight. So we'll turn it over to our co-host, Brother Halim Mustafa, for any final wrap-up words that you'd like to say. And we're going to end with a nice little minute or two of jazz music if you want to stay on and listen to that as we close. But we'll give it to Brother Halim Mustafa, our co-host right now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good evening, everyone. In my closing, I want to say we are the Modern Day Achievers, which is a social movement for students K-12 plus up to PhD status. We have to be about the TLCI, which is teamwork, leadership, communication, and intelligence. Until we have our teachers reflecting that level of teamwork, that level of leadership, that level of communication and intelligence, we will not reach our young people. So I'm hoping that everyone here who are engaged in the book you watch and speak understand the importance of teamwork, the importance of leadership, communication and intelligence. It's not an egotistical thing. It's a heartfelt commitment. And if we all feel that commitment, there's nothing that can stop us. So there's nothing stopping me, nothing stopping you, but just an attitude. So let's get our attitude on that TLCI spirit. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We're closing now. Hope you enjoyed the show and hope you will stay for just a second or two. Enjoy the end of our program with a nice little relaxing music as we close out our evening. God bless you all and thank you for participating. And Booker T. Washington speaks on this night, February 18th, 2017. Mm-hmm.